calling the House Education Finance Committee to order. Good morning, everybody. We're going to do our first order of business. It's going to be the minutes. Representative Purcell, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I have, and I move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Purcell moves the minutes. Any discussion on the minutes or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. Minutes are adopted. So, members, we have a bill in front of us with a lot of testifiers today, but we don't have a fiscal note, which you've probably noticed in your packet. So the intention is to adopt the amendments to the bill. We'll pull up the DE3, we'll adopt the two amendments to get the bill in the shape the author would like. We're gonna hear testimony and have discussions, but then we're gonna lay the bill over until tomorrow when we have a fiscal note, because I wanna make absolutely positively sure we have the accurate information in front of us before we move a bill. So that is the intention today. And I'd also like to thank Representative Jordan for her absolutely tireless work on this important bill. She has worked with MDE through their requested changes, and with MDE has worked with the federal program to make sure we're right on track. And I just want to make sure, and she's making sure, that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. So, Representative Kreischer, are you okay with that procedure?
I am, Madam Chair, and I think you had mentioned some flexibility on the new amendments, which I'm okay with as well.
Yes, we have some flexibility on amendments. If we can chat about it afterwards, since we may or may not have to go past the amendment deadline for tomorrow, depending on when we get the fiscal note. With that, Representative Jordan, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have several author's amendments. Traditionally, the committee adopts the author's amendments so that the bill is in the shape the author would like. Representative Jordan, why don't you first move the DE3 amendment, and then we'll move the other two amendments in order, and then you can describe the full package after that. So, would you like to move the DE3 amendment?
Yep, and just thank you, Madam Chair. I move the DE3 amendment, and this substitutes the governor and MDE's preferred language to establish the Meals for All program at MDE and sets up the reimbursement program.
Wonderful. And then with that, Representative Jordan, would you like to move the A2 amendment to the DE3 in front of the committee?
So moved, Madam Chair. This amendment fixes a typo to set the enactment year for this year, 2023, as opposed to 2024.
Members, are there any questions on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment to the DE3, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A2 amendment's adopted. Next up, Representative Jordan, we have the A5 amendment. Can you briefly describe the A5 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. The A5 is a result of conversations with the U.S. Department of Agriculture and MDE to maximize school participation and federal funding for the Meals for All program.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Members, are there any questions on the A5 amendment? Representative Kreischer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the bill author, I'm just wondering, I know that you're trying to get all this right, and we've been trying to follow the amendments as we get through all the different agencies. Would it be possible to have Mr. Strom or Ms. Perry just walk us through quickly exactly what we're doing?
Yes, Representative Kreischer, Mr. Strom or Ms. Perry?
Chair Joachim, members, the A5 amendment gets at the issue about that the department is going to speak to about whether or not participation in the community eligibility provision is mandatory, and if not, how the state can best maximize participation in the community eligibility provision in order to provide the free school meals program that's in front of you. There apparently was some change of thought in the last 10 days or so about this, and the purpose of the language in the A5 is to maximize the federal money that could be available before the state money comes in on top of that to provide the free meals that are authorized for school lunch and breakfast in House File 5. Again, I think the department will go into this in some detail, but that's a quick summary, Representative Kreischer, of the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Kreischer?
Thank you. And to Bill Author, thank you for your work. I know you've been, just very quickly, mm-hmm. can you explain, because I'm looking at 1.3, we're deleting the shall and making it a must. What are we making a must?
Madam Chair, okay. Representative Crenshaw, the statutes shall and must in Minnesota mean exactly the same thing. Okay. This is a stylistic change that MDE asked for, but there's no difference in the use of the two words.
Representative Crenshaw.
Thank you. I just want to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Crenshaw. With that, members, are there any other questions on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. The A5 amendment is adopted. Now before us, we have the DE3 amendment, which is the bill we'll be discussing today, as amended. Thank you for the reminder for those all listening at home. So Representative Jordan, go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for your time today. When 1 in 6 Minnesota children is trying to learn on an empty stomach in our state, it's far past time for all of us to act. And that's why I'm honored to present House File 5, which is a bill to bring breakfast and lunch to all Minnesota students. Members, this is a bill that centers students' needs. During our very first committee hearing, we shared stories about our memories from school. And many of us remembered favorite teachers or books that we all read, but we also shared less happy memories as well. We heard stories about students who come from families experiencing extreme poverty. We listened to members' memories about struggles to learn. And we heard stories that told us we don't know what students bring with them to their classrooms, and we should never assume. But we do know that hunger is something that too many students bring with them to their classrooms, and our system is letting kids go hungry. This bill establishes no-cost breakfast and lunch for all students attending schools participating in the National School Lunch Program. It also enrolls qualifying schools into the Federal Community Eligibility Program, or SEP, or CEP. This is a federal program that provides universal, no-cost meals at schools in high-poverty neighborhoods, where many students come from families eligible for SNAP and other assistance programs. I have incredible testifiers here to provide context for why this bill is necessary, but before they speak, I do want members to know that now is the time for House File 5. Schools are no longer receiving the resources they need for meals from the federal government. Student lunch debt is racking up across the state. Families are struggling with the high cost of food, and they need these meals now. And with that, Madam Chair, I would like to move to testimony.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Before we do that, members, in my rush to get through things and not forgetting procedure since it's been a while, we are going to adopt the DE3 amendment so the bill is in the shape that the author would like before we move on, and then we'll be laying the bill over on the table at the end of the hearing and have discussion more tomorrow when we have the fiscal note. So with that, members, anybody have any questions on the DE3 amendment that's now in the shape that the author would like to discuss it? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE3 amendment as adopted, please say yes.
Yes.
Yes. All those opposed, no. The DE3 amendment is adopted as amended. Go ahead, Representative Joy.
That's the bill, Madam Chair. I'd like to move to testimony.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Colleen Moriarty, and I am the Executive Director at Hunger Solutions Minnesota. I'm really honored to be here today, but I too would like to take this moment to thank all of you for being champions to end hunger in your local communities. You have food shelves, you have meal programs, you have food banks, you have a variety of ways that we can work to end hunger. But this kind of bill assumes the fact that all children have the right to have a nutritious meal in school, a breakfast or a lunch. And it also lessens the stress. It eliminates any lunch shaming, eliminates bullying. It makes the policy of having an accessible, nutritious meal available to everyone clear. It streamlines the administrative costs, and it makes a difference to how people feel when they enter the classroom and when they leave the classroom every day. We have long been champions of this kind of policy at Hunger Solutions Minnesota, but in the last several years, we've been joined by a wide coalition that includes public corporations like General Mills, like Land O'Lakes, like Blue Cross Blue Shield, and community groups and food shelf members and policy members from the School Nutrition Association and other people who are really interested and invested in this. None of this could have been happening without Sydney. This has been a, she is a warrior for kids in schools, and it is my honor to be able to work alongside her as we move forward with this planning for universal meals. We will be joining other states like California, Vermont, other states that are currently considering that. There are 11 different states that are considering universal meals. We saw we could do it during COVID, and we did it. Now we just need to keep it going so that everybody has a right to learn and a right to learn on a full stomach. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Rep. Jordan, did you have any other testifiers?
Madam Chair, I think we can move to public testimony.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Before Ms. Moriarty leaves, I'm sorry, were there any questions for Ms. Moriarty from the members before we move to public testimony? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Moriarty. Next up, we have Dr. Sarah Gerstead, and then after that, Lori Smith on deck. Please, when you get settled, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Dr. Sarah Gerstead, and I am the Medical Director of Mental Health Services at Children's Minnesota. Thank you so much for having me here today to express Children's Minnesota's support of House File 5, which provides no-cost breakfast and lunch to all Minnesota students. Children's Minnesota is the largest pediatric healthcare system in the state, serving more than 166,000 kids annually. We serve an incredibly diverse patient population that includes kids from all 87 counties in Minnesota and 60% of the counties and surrounding states. Almost half the kids we see in our hospitals and clinics are enrolled in medical assistance. I'm here today because proper nutrition is fundamental to every aspect of a child's health and well-being, including their mental health. Food insecurity can impact a child's mental health and behavioral health at all developmental stages. So in preschoolers, this can look like increased behavioral challenges, increased aggression, anxious or depressed moods. In school-age kids, the impact is similar with food insecurity associated with anxiety and depression. In adolescents, experiencing food insecurity is also likely to experience anxiety and depression. And it's also associated with increased suicidal ideation and substance use disorders. The social stigma and stress associated with food insecurity often contributes to kids' mental health challenges. The shame that students experience when they are treated differently from their peers who are standing in the school lunch line. The stress of knowing that a deficit in their school meal account could add to their family's financial burden. This is overwhelming for kids. My colleagues and I have seen kids' mental health reach a point of crisis. In 2021, for the first time at Children's Minnesota, suicidal ideation was one of the top five diagnoses of presenting conditions. We are continuing to work on meeting the needs of kids and families by expanding our continuum of mental health services beyond outpatient to our inpatient mental health care and to our partial treatment program. But we can't do this work alone. The mental health support we need to provide kids and families is limited if their social needs, like access to nutritious foods, are not being met. A key component of ending the mental health crisis facing Minnesota kids is to invest in the foundational things needed for optimal health, reducing the need for more costly health care and education interventions. This bill does that by ensuring kids have access to food that will fuel their cognitive development, their physical growth, and support their emotional and mental health. These are elements that are essential to kids' academic success and ability to achieve their highest potential. And thank you so much, Representative Jordan, for supporting this important legislation.
Thank you, Dr. Gerstead. Next up, we have Lori Smith and then Jessica Ellison. Please, when you get settled, state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Lori Smith, and I'm the head cook at Kennedy Community School in St. Cloud, and I'm a trustee on the executive board of SEIU.
Proceed.
Universal free meals for students would make such a difference. I know the kids that come through my lunch line. I know the ones that don't get enough to eat at home. And even though I'm not supposed to, I slide them just a little bit extra. Make sure your belly's full, I always tell them. And on the weekends, I make sure that they go home with backpacks with food in them. I know that nutrition is one of the most important factors for student growth and academic success. Children behave and learn better when they're well nourished. The COVID-19 crisis has made even more clear that school nutrition programs and food service employees are critical to student health and well-being. During the school closures, we distributed bag lunches and breakfast from multiple sites across St. Cloud. Not every family could make it into the schools for curbside pickup, so we had buses drive out and deliver the meals. 120 lunch heroes in St. Cloud prepared more than 170,000 meals during distance learning. The seven of us at my building did 400 to 550 lunches a day. After work, I would grab 11 of them lunches, and I would go to the neighborhood kids who couldn't make it to the schools, and I would drop them bags and ring the doorbell and dash off so that we could keep our distancing. Making sure that every student has access to nutritious meals regardless of their parents' income or ability to pay will make a huge difference in their lives. It will also make a difference in our lives. It's food service workers who are asked to enforce district meal debt policies. It's the clerical workers who have to call students. One of my friends, a secretary in St. Cloud, told me that she had to call a family once and tell them that their son could not walk on commencements because he had a negative lunch account that needed to be taken care of before he could graduate. So I want to thank you for the hard work and making sure that the kids get meals and so that we can do the jobs that we love.
Thank you so much, Lori Smith. Next up, we have Jessica Ellison and then Darcy Stuber. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jessica Ellison, and I live with my husband and our four school-aged children in White Bear Lake. I am an educator, chair of the White Bear Lake Area School Board, and until the pandemic, I never had reason to be nervous about our ability to provide meals in our home. That's an enormous privilege, and I want to note that. Food insecurity is an ongoing stress for many families, and our experiences the last few years shook me out of my bubble. My husband lost his job as a chef 3 weeks into the pandemic. Unemployment was helpful, but my salary at the time was not sufficient to keep us fully afloat. We tightened our belts and made do. At the time, our children were 12, 10, 8, and 6. Growing, active, perpetually hungry kids. Our son can eat three bowls of cereal in one sitting. And if you have teens and tweens, you know the real financial problem isn't the cereal, it's the milk. That summer, we picked up free meals from our district once a week, including expensive items like milk, fruit, and vegetables. I can't express the relief that this was for us, because bills keep coming for mortgage, electricity, insurance, garbage, water. So we bought less food or cheaper food or less nutritious food. A bag of grapes can cost anywhere from $5 to $7. My kids roll through a bag in a few days. Do we buy the grapes and skip a few other things or skip the fresh fruit for the week? We are frugal people. We count our pennies and don't have debt except our mortgage. My husband works in food service and I work in the nonprofit world. At the beginning of this school year, we exceeded the annual salary qualification for free and reduced lunch by $1,000. Last year, school meals were still free due to continued federal funding. The free meals that were such a weight off of our shoulders in 2021 and 2020 were no longer available this year. Children learn better when they're not hungry. It's frankly embarrassing when you can't afford food. Our babies should not have to be hungry at school, and our families should not have to shoulder the fear of food insecurity. The other consideration from where I sit on my local school board is funding. When there is outstanding school lunch debt, the general fund is often tapped, which can come at the cost of other district needs. In my district, we saw a 21%, which is $478,000, decrease in compensatory revenue between the 2018-19 school year and the 2022-23 school year, due to paper applications no longer being required to be submitted for free and reduced price meals. This could equate to roughly 5 to 7 teaching positions. These are not decisions that anyone should have to make. Healthy foods or no, lunch debt or teaching positions. This is a basic need that must be met. Schools already have the setup to provide breakfast and lunch for our children. Universal school meals that are sufficiently funded to ensure that districts can hire staff, buy supplies, and plan for equipment without having to scrape the budget elsewhere would ensure that each child is fed, no questions asked. Please consider the great burden this would relieve for so many families in Minnesota, and I thank you so much for your consideration.
Thank you, Board Member Allison. Next up, we have Darcy Stieber. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed. Hopefully I got it right this time.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Darcy Stieber. I'm the Director of Nutrition Services for Mankato Area Public Schools. I'm also the Public Policy Chair for the Minnesota School Nutrition Association. I am here to offer MSNA support for Universal Lunch and Breakfast Program as found in House File 5 as amended. In September 2022, students returned back to school and families were surprised to learn that meals would no longer be served to all students at no charge. This caused a flurry of applications for educational benefits to flood nutrition service departments across the state. Unfortunately, many families' income was just over the threshold to qualify for free and reduced meals. Passing House File 5 would allow us to continue to serve all meals to all students at no charge. Most families do not qualify for free and reduced meals, are not wealthy. They are families that fundraise for their children's extracurricular activities and carefully watch their families' budgets that are being affected by inflation. By making meals available to all students, students can breathe a sigh of relief knowing that their school meal balance is no longer an issue. They can simply come to school to learn and receive nutritious meals along the way. And their families can put these dollars into the many bills that pile up at kitchen tables, like rent, gas, utilities, and extracurriculars. Currently, students do not worry about the access to books, iPads, Chromebooks, or transportation to school. Why would we not provide a basic human need as a meal for our students? Eating at school leads to improved academic performance, fewer behavioral incidents, and a sense of community. Lunch is a time to refuel, relax, and enjoy a break from the classroom. When students are well nourished, they're able to focus on their schoolwork. Students that regularly eat school meals receive better nutrition than students who bring a lunch from home. School meals are well-rounded by providing lean proteins, whole grains, a variety of fruits and vegetables, and low-fat milk. As a nutrition director, I started working in school nutrition because I was a student on free and reduced meals. My lunch ticket was blue or pink. I wanted to serve our next generation healthy meals, as I received many years ago. School nutrition directors and staff do not enter child nutrition to be debt collectors, nor did we enter this line of work to create anxiety amongst kids about where their next meal might come from. I know that many of you have lived in multiple worlds, balancing many interests, but we in school nutrition live in the cafeteria for one reason, to feed kids. After serving students free breakfast and lunch for the past 2.5 years, it is time that Minnesota steps forward as a leader in our nation and continues to serve free meals to our students. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Darcy Stieber. Next up, we have two remote testifiers, so we'll take that testimony, and then since we have the folks still here in the room, take any questions you may have for the testifiers so far before we move on to Darren Cordy from MDE. So on remote testimony, we have Crystal Fitzsimmons. Ms. Fitzsimmons, please say your name for the record and proceed.
Crystal Fitzsimmons, Director of School and Out-of-School Time Programs for the Food Research and Action Center. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of HF5. I work for the Food Research and Action Center, commonly called FRAC, and we are the leading national nonprofit organization working to improve public policies to eradicate hunger and undernutrition in the United States. I have spent more than 20 years working to increase access to school meals and have had a front row seat as schools across the country implemented free school meals for all during the pandemic. It has been a game changer, supporting students and improving school nutrition finances and operations. While there is no silver bullet to improve academic achievement, school breakfast and lunch are incredibly effective educational interventions. Experiencing hunger is linked to lower math scores, repeating a grade, suspensions, and difficulty getting along with your peers. Participation in school meals is actually linked to improved academic achievement, better test scores, reduced absenteeism and tardiness, and fewer discipline referrals. In other words, school meals allow students to focus, concentrate, learn, and behave. One of the best things a school can do is make sure that students are not sitting in class hungry. If Minnesota enacts this bill, families will be able to count on nutritious breakfasts and lunches each school day, easing the pressure on their food budget. Offering free meals to all students also reduces stigma, helping draw eligible but not participating students into the program. Building back from the pandemic really gives us the opportunity to reimagine school meals. The nation has proven free school meals for all is doable, and it's also proven that it's the right thing to do. States across the country like California, Maine, and Colorado have taken the important step that Minnesota is considering. Many others, including North Dakota and Wisconsin, are considering similar bills. Minnesota is in a particularly good position to implement free school meals for all because of its success with Medicaid direct certification. Schools are processing significantly fewer school meal applications because of it, and that has reduced administrative work for schools, and it's helped increase federal reimbursements. This will help support the financial viability of free school meals for all in Minnesota. And at a time when our country is critically examining how to end racial disparities, free school meals for all can help advance equity. Free meals would help reduce racial disparities in health and education for Black, Latino, and Indigenous children who experience hunger at disproportionate rates. It is also critical for advancing racial equity and justice, as it would help ensure that Black, Indigenous, and Latino students are able to access the nutrition they need to thrive in the classroom and beyond. Providing free school meals to all students is an investment in Minnesota's future. I urge you to support HF5. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Crystal Fitzsimmons. If you could stay on remotely if there's any questions, we're going to have one more remote testifier, and then we'll go to question member questions. Next up is Ilya Demery. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello. My name is Ilya Demery, and I'm a student at St. Cloud State University. One of the main reasons why I'm here is to be a voice for students and also my family as well. Growing up, for me, because of my mother's income, I was not eligible for free reduced lunch, which means I was most times wondering where and how I would get my lunch for school. Most times, I remember being embarrassed because I had to ask teachers and other staff, could I be used to use the school pantry. One of my biggest concerns now is my siblings. Now that I'm in college, I want to make sure that they are not worried about where and how they would get school lunch. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ilya Demery. With that, members, I'd like to go to questions for our testifiers, if you have any, before we move on to our final public testifier. Members, any questions for any of the testifiers that we've had so far? Especially from our ones remotely before we let them go. It's a quiet committee today. I don't think any of us had enough caffeine. So with that, I'd like to thank the public testifiers so far and those that spoke remotely. And with that, we'll move on to Darren Cordy, Assistant Commissioner from the Minnesota Department of Education.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Darren Cordy. I'm an Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Student Support Services at the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this, what we consider to be a very important bill, and we're happy to see the House prioritizing this early in session. You heard a lot already about the benefits of school meals and how students who are healthy and well-fed learn better than those who are experiencing hunger. We talk a lot, I think, in this committee and at MDE about investing in evidence-based practices. And I think, as you heard Ms. Fitzsimmons speak, there is a plethora of evidence that shows that expanding access to school meals is something that provides benefit. It increases student achievement and life outcomes for students. excuse me. We know that a lot of kids are falling through the cracks under the current program. And that's for a lot of reasons. I think one of the things that we hear is, hey, aren't we already providing free meals to students who need them? But for a family of four, the federal poverty guidelines for free lunches is just $36,000. For reduced price lunches, it's $51,000. So as we heard the testifier say, if you're $1,000 over that, it's not like it's something that tapers off. You immediately go from free meals to fully paid meals, which for a family of four can be upwards of $1,500 a year. This is a priority for the governor and the lieutenant governor, as you've seen them and as you will see in their budget. And again, the reason is because we know that kids are falling through the cracks. And there's a lot of different reasons why that happens. Some of it is because families just choose not to fill out the forms, and there can be a lot of different reasons why that happens. Part of it is just being too prideful and not wanting to fill out the forms, but also families worried about their immigration status if they're new to country. The other positives about this is it eliminates lunch shaming, reduces administrative costs and burdens. And to speak to some of the technical aspects of the bill, as Mr. Strom mentioned, we do have a provision in here to require or to incentivize CEP participation. CEP is a community eligibility provision. It's a federal program which allows schools with high indicators of poverty to serve all students at a free rate, with the federal government providing the cost for that. So we want to maximize the utilization of those federal funds in order to reduce the state burden. We also heard some concerns, you may have heard concerns from some larger districts about whether the funding that's provided in this bill is going to cover the costs that they actually incur for the cost of food and meals. And we continue to work with our community partners on that provision, but ultimately our goal is to ensure that full federal reimbursement for free meals, for every meal served, is what districts are receiving to cover their costs. So with that, I'd be happy to stand for any questions about the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Cordy. Representative Bakeberg, did I see your hand go up?
Yeah.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Cordy, for your testimony. You talked about incentivizing participation in CEP. Can you just explain kind of how that works for schools and how it's funded through CEP versus schools that are not? And then I'll let you finish that, and I just have one more.
Oh, okay, great. Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. Yeah, so again, the community eligibility provision is something that's established under the federal government. And the way that it works is that each school is assigned what's called an identified student percentage, or ISP. And then once you reach, it's basically based on the number of students that are directly certified for free and reduced price lunch. So that means that if in Minnesota, if you're a family that participates in SNAP, TANF, MFIP, or now Medicaid, you're automatically eligible to receive free meals in Minnesota. So we take the percentage of those students at each school site to determine what their eligibility is for the community eligibility provision. The way the system is currently set up, if you have an ISP rate of 62.5 or higher, you are eligible to receive funding for free meals for all students at basically the full federal reimbursement. So that's why in this bill, if you have that CEP ISP above 62.5%, you're required to participate in CEP rather than receive the state having to pay for those funds, the federal government would.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just curious, does every school district that is eligible to participate in CEP choose to participate in CEP? And I can understand why they would, but why wouldn't they choose to participate?
Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative. I would say not all of them do. Most of them do. We do have a few districts that have chosen not to. We hear a number of different reasons why. I think one reason that we've heard is that they don't want to call further attention to schools that may have higher poverty than other schools. That being said, I think, you know, the way that this bill was structured, we wanted to maximize those federal funds, and we think if there's an opportunity for schools or for students to receive universal free meals, this is proposed here, we want to make sure that the feds are paying for as much of that as possible.
Representative Baker, follow up.
That's good. I'm good.
Thank you. Rep. I want to give Representative Krisha the last. So is there any other questions from members or comments about the bill? This is our time for testimony and questions. When we move to the bill tomorrow, when we have the fiscal note, we will just be taking that up. So members, any comments? Representative Pryor.
Great. So if I'm understanding, this is the good time for member discussion and comments on the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair,
for
this opportunity to speak on it. We did get to hear it in our Education Policy Committee before, and really appreciate the opportunity to hear the testifiers again and to again review the data on why this is a good idea. I was particularly struck by the testimony from our school board member from White Bear Lake, school member, I'm going to go back to her name if I can, well, I can't find it, sorry. because then I had my own memories when I had young kids in school and being on that line. So my husband and I, he was finishing medical training, and we had three kids, two of them in school, a baby at home, and I was not working. And we were relying on our savings because we were not making it. And I did the budget, and I knew that every month we were falling behind. So it was like we used all of our savings from the time when we were both working. And then I depleted my retirement account because that was the right choice. And we were really lucky that we had that good choice out there because we actually do have money for retirement. We're okay. So that's not the issue. But other people are making impossible choices because they're just above that line. So I know that with this bill, we're helping those kids that are already receiving the meals, removing the stigma around it. We're also helping, that's another huge group of families and kids that are just above that line. And then the other thing we're doing is we're making sure that every kid in Minnesota knows that meals, nutrition, is part of their education. And so when they come to the school and they see, hey, I got another breakfast here. Because I know, and those wonderful lunch workers are saying, yeah, kid, you know, don't go to school on an empty stomach. Everybody's there supporting what kids need to succeed. And we're with one message in every school district in Minnesota saying nutrition is essential to your growth and your education. And that's what this bill is doing, and this is the opportunity to get it passed. And I think this is something that we can all come forward and understand the importance of this action that we're taking today and that we'll be taking in the future. So it's persistence to get it done and get it done right. But I'm so happy with where we are today and how we're moving forward on that. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And I forgot to mention this too. So we opened the opportunity for testifiers from the public. We've heard from the testifiers from the public. No one else signed up. But quickly, is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Sensenmura.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for this important work. You know, I've worked with young people for over a decade, and I was trained in how to support young people, you know, who are struggling, whether they got in a fight at recess or whether they're yelling at a teacher or whether they're refusing to do work. And, you know, I was trained to kind of debrief with students. So you'd ask a series of questions like, what happened? Why did it happen? How were you feeling? What were you thinking at the time? What are you thinking now? You know, and over time I learned that, like, none of those questions mattered because I had to start with the central question of, have you eaten today? Because if you haven't eaten any of the things that, you know, I'm asking you to do, which is reflect on what happened or think about why you did something, you can't do that if you're hungry. And 9 times out of 10, the answer to that question would really provide the context I needed for why the student was struggling. So I see this bill, I see this investment as kind of the foundation for everything else this committee wants to do. I've heard us talk about a lot of big things that we want to tackle, literacy rates in our state, graduation requirements, and making sure that our young people are prepared for the workforce, thinking about school climate and thinking about, you know, how we're creating welcoming environments for students. But none of that can be done if young people are in our schools hungry. And I want to say last week, and I'm sorry that I can't look at him right now, but I actually really appreciated a phrase that Representative Kreisha said, and I don't know if you made this up or I have never heard before, but you talked about biological dignity, right? And we were talking about that at that time in the sense of biological dignity, that all young people deserve to have menstrual products in their school, right? That is something that gives them biological dignity. I see this bill as part of that, kind of laying the foundation, making sure that young people in our schools are not going hungry. That is biological dignity, and that's a foundation for all the work I think this committee needs to do. So I'd urge all members to vote yes on this today.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Sensenbrenner. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for carrying this. As someone who was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 16 in high school, chronic illness that you have to balance, and that majority type 1 diabetics are children, to balance with nutrition and insulin, I can't imagine what it would be like to be hungry or to need the actual food to provide me the ability to learn, to function as best as a student without a disability. And I work with those youth. I mentor a lot of the type 1 diabetic youth who could barely afford their insulin, meaning that they have to choose with food and insulin, and this is an issue that we are living in our public school system and all of our school system throughout the state. And I want to vocalize the importance of the legacy of Philando Castile, who dedicated his life to the nutrition and the needs of all children and didn't allow them to go home hungry, and provided that. If our youth workers and our educators are going out of our own pockets to feed our students, that's a problem. And this is one step closer to fixing that problem. So thank you, Representative Jordan. Gracias.
Thank you, Representative Perez-Vega. Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. I just want to, during the testimony, we heard multiple references to lunch shaming and unpaid debts. And I think anyone with a heartbeat would agree that we want kids to be fed. Like, that's just common sense. But I think we also have to recognize that school districts across Minnesota are not doing lunch shaming. That may have happened in the past. And if it is happening, that's an individual school district that I would challenge the department to address that with that individual school district. It's policy 534 that most school districts have adopted. So kind of the one size fits all is something that I'm uncomfortable with. The unpaid meal debt, that will continue. I just think we need to understand and we need to recognize that students will continue to get additional entrees, and they will continue to get a la carte items, which will continue to lead to debt. So and just based off of what Representative Jordan shared in our policy committee, that is not addressed in this bill. The other concern that I have with this bill is frankly the cost, and we don't have the fiscal note on it yet. But in my role as a building principal, I have sat across the table from countless teachers and told them they don't have a job next year because of funding issues. And I have significant concerns with the long-term funding implications of this bill. We all want to feed kids. In fact, we offered an amendment in policy that would have raised that threshold, that would have addressed those concerns, but that was rejected. So it is important, and as I've talked to teachers, cooks, custodians, and talked about that, we're all for feeding kids. Let's just have that be clear. But the concern is the long-term implications. We have a significant budget surplus now. We will not have that surplus in years to come, and that will come with consequences, and it will mean less opportunities for our kids, and that's my concern.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. And the fiscal note is why we're not moving the bill today, because I want to make sure we have all the right information. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I wanted to echo what Chair Pryor shared as well. I really identified with School Board Chair Ellison's testimony. My spouse actually runs three food shelves in our communities, and working at a nonprofit, my family found ourselves right on that cusp as well, trying to figure out, do we fill out the form? Do we qualify? My kids are on MA, but we're not. Where is that line? Oh my gosh, there's so many other things to figure out. That's a thing that can go by the wayside. And my family did not have as much need as other folks in my neighborhood and in my district, but the issue of just not having that be another thing that parents need to worry about or need to think about, that was a gift. And I would love to pay that forward for other families who find themselves maybe even working in the hunger space and then sending their kids to school and trying to figure that out. And I want to also just extend my deep gratitude to all of our testifiers who have joined us in person or remotely, and to Representative Jordan for bringing this bill up to our attention and your tenacity. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a couple comments, similar to what I made in ed policy for those of you who are here, but I want to thank Representative Jordan for bringing this forward. I do believe it's an issue. There are families falling in the cracks, and we need to address that. Where I disagree is with this particular solution. I believe this is a shotgun-type solution that pulls in everybody, families that could pay for their lunches, but whatever, and or do the more surgical type of solution where we address those families and possibly raise the eligibility threshold to loop them in and make sure that those kids are able to eat meals. Similar to what Representative Bakebird said, this is very expensive. We don't have a fiscal note yet, but from what I've heard, it's low end, probably $200 per student. That's per year. So that's equivalent to a 2% increase for schools every year. At some point, we're not going to have this huge surplus. We know that. That's how it works. And then suddenly we're competing with lunches for kids who can pay for them, to mental health services, to having to cut staff. I just don't believe this is the proper solution. So I want to share that because it's a great concern of mine. We want to make sure that our districts are in good shape and our students, not just now, but in the future too. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. And like Representative Bennett, these comments are going to be resembling of my comments from the policy committee as well. I want to thank Representative Jordan for bringing this important bill forward. I want to thank our testifiers. I did get a chance to talk to Ms. Smith, who did a wonderful job testifying in both committees, that when I recently returned to my alma mater where I teach and visited with 12th grade students in government class, I used this bill in the committee hearing in the policy side of things as an example of structurally how the work gets done here at the Capitol. The students there and the stories they shared and their response to this bill led me to believe that there wasn't one student there that disagreed with this. In a personal story this morning, getting ready to come down here, visiting with my six-year-old daughter who loves school lunch, whose favorite is lasagna, which is coming around again pretty soon. She refers to it as a spaghetti brick. She indicated to me that this makes sense, that kids shouldn't be hungry at school. And I believe in this bill. I believe in what will result from this bill. And having been a high school teacher for the last 24 years, we see in real time the impacts that hunger has on learning. And the work that gets done can't be to the level of quality when anyone's hungry. And so I strongly support this bill and urge a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Representative Kreisha, I've got another hand that came up. I wanted to give you kind of wrap-up words, but if you had questions first, maybe we'll get the questions out of the way and then I'll come back to you. Is that okay?
Sure, whatever you'd like, Madam Chair.
Representative Prichard.
Thank you. And so, Representative Jordan, thank you. One of the fun things about this place is watching when a legislator takes on an issue and the passion comes out. And there's no question there are areas of agreement on here. And one thing that I will say is I'm sure at some point this will get done or I'll get into a bill. And if this had existed, Napoleon Dynamite wouldn't have had to give his tater tots up. Terrible popular reference for those of you that've seen the movie. There are some areas of agreement that there's no question we have. Collection issues. I've worked in schools. I've been in the schools. When I was a teacher, I spent every day eating with the students. Because it was great. It was fantastic. But schools should not be in the business of collections. There's no question about that. The forms can be unwieldy. They can be difficult. I understand that as well. I think when we talk about fair and focused funding for all the students, one of the things that we can acknowledge in our schools is because of the mandates and many of the other pressures that we put on schools or that come up in the environmental, our schools are in a time of always competing for funds. And I get that. And I think that what that leads us to is a problem that we have to face here, which is because the schools are always competing and trying to increase the funding, sometimes we rush programs through or we get a program through that we have to come back and fix because, hey, if I just get the funding now, I'll deal with the problems later. And I'm trying to put that in front of us so we don't get to that situation. At the end of the day, I think that we're still putting a state program in place. And even though it has all of the issues that we'll talk around, nutrition and students not eating and or not being hungry in the classroom, there are some of those that we can solve, some of those we can't. There are external environmental factors that, let's not pretend the state program is going to solve all those. Maybe it can move the needle or get us there. So I want to be super transparent about that. And I also want to, whoever's sitting in this committee down the road in future sessions, I want them to look back and say, hey, you got this right. We're not dealing with this because we all see programs coming back up. So a couple of questions to Commissioner Cordy. As we're looking at this, and the dollars are going to move to schools, and you talked a little bit about making sure that there's enough dollars to cover it. What kind of auditing or what kind of programs is the Department of Education going to have to put in place? So not only do we see schools that, because this is a very complicated formula as it's starting to get there, that not only that they're short, but those that will have a surplus, we can't move a surplus back into the general fund, as I understand it on this. Is that correct? How are you working with that?
Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Madam Chair, Representative Krisha, yeah, so in terms of the question about the surplus, yeah, if a district is running a surplus, they have to spend that down, which they can do so. Part of how things are spent is that you can pay for administrative costs, costs for staffing, equipment, things of that nature. So that's typically where you see if a district is running a food service account surplus that they're able to spend those down on things as needed. The way the program is kind of designed is that the federal government comes up with these estimates, and it's the per meal cost isn't just to cover the cost of the food, it's to cover the cost of the whole program, which is why we in this bill rely on that calculation from the feds. The reason we don't put a specific number in the bill is because that number changes every year based upon the needs, and thankfully USDA has been very responsive in recent years to increase food costs and supply chain issues, et cetera, that have put pressures on food service budgets. So we hope that continues in the future. Another thing that there's some complexity in the formula around high need schools, as well as there's a performance-based cash reimbursement that schools can receive as well. All of that is baked into the automated nutrition program IT system that we have at MDE that each school utilizes along with their school nutrition vendors. So we're confident that we'll be able to get this implemented, and we know we can because we did it for 2 years during the pandemic.
Representative Krisha, follow up.
Thank you, and a couple of series of questions. So Representative Cordy, so one of the things you mentioned, I'm sorry, Deputy Assistant Cordy, Deputy Commissioner Cordy. Yeah. Mr. Cordy,
sure.
you mentioned that if there's a surplus, they have to spend that down. So have you looked into, and I think it would be important to know that, let's say because of the formula, a school carries a very large surplus, that, you know, let's just say it's for rounding $50,000. So they have a large amount of students and the reimbursement, they end up with a large surplus of $50,000. Because that those dollars couldn't be used for additional teacher pay or additional academic programs, they have to be spent down in the food service. And so is that for equipment? Is that, you had mentioned administrative. I mean, how would we guard against that? Because that could be a issue.
Yeah.
Right. Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Madam Chair and Representative Cresha, these are really good questions and something that I think I want to bring back to our team for a little bit more conversation. But the limitation that we really have now around the ability to move those funds is on the federal level. The federal government says you can't spend federal nutrition funds on things that aren't part of that nutrition program. Because this is a state program, you know, presumably we would have some flexibility in how we want to draft this language to provide some flexibility. But I think, you know, and I would certainly defer to the food service professionals in the room to speak to this, but I think the larger concern is not with what do we do with the surplus, it's what do we do if we don't have enough to cover the costs and everything. So that's kind of the happy medium that we're trying to find is making sure that schools are receiving what they need to run their programs and not a penny less. But we also have opportunities, too, as we move, as this gets implemented, as we see through the forecast what the funding is to make adjustments if needed.
Representative Cresha, follow up?
Yeah, thank you. So, okay, so you, and again, this is a great discussion. You gave me some more insight there. Because, yes, you're right, Mr. Cordy, we don't want to be high or we want to be low. We want to be right there in the middle. But again, because we can't move these dollars, we just have to watch that. And once they're allocated, they're allocated. Another thing you mentioned, and I think I just have two questions, two more follow-ups. So you mentioned, and I think transparency is super important. In fact, it's our obligation here. We've mentioned we're removing lunch shaming. And I also heard another testimony that this would be all meals to all students. There's some inconsistencies to both of those. One of those is we say, instead of all meals to all students, we only say a maximum of one meal and one breakfast per student, right? So, unfortunately, boys and girls grow, and they shoot up through junior high, and they want to go back for additional meals, so we're not doing all meals for all students. We're doing one breakfast, one lunch. But if the student goes back, that student still has the ability, unfortunately, to run up a lunch balance that, if it's not paid, becomes a deficit, which runs us into a situation of the school having to address that.
Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, Representative Cresha, yes, that's correct. And the one breakfast and one lunch is based on the federal reimbursement system that currently exists now. So for a student who receives or is eligible for free meals, the federal government will reimburse up to two meals per day. So that was kind of the model that we're following. I think that you are correct that additional meals costs were incurred, that could go onto the student's meal account. Same goes for a la carte, which was mentioned earlier. I think the goal in this bill is to make sure that students are getting that baseline level of nutrition that is determined by the USDA, that all the research has been put on top of. But if students want to go beyond that, if families want to go beyond that, then, you know, that's a different discussion about whether or not the state should be picking up the cost of that.
Representative Cresha.
So, okay, so now my brain is really spinning, so I'm thinking back to my days of implementing a point of sales in a school. A student comes through and they get this first meal, and what we're I think the things that we're trying to agree on, the school shouldn't be in collections, and we're trying to eliminate almost that point of sales at the lunch, but we can't. So we're still going to be collecting on, I look at this way, right? The student that comes back, if we've eliminated the point of sales at a lunch line, how does that student get additional meals?
Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Madam Chair and Representative Cresha, it may be better suited question for one of the food service professionals that actually operates that. My assumption is that students would continue to have, you know, a PIN or some kind of an ID that the district would be able to track the number of meals that they're receiving, and if there were meals that were received in excess of that, that would be calculated as well. But it still does drastically reduce the administrative burden at that point of sale piece, where you're going from basically, you know, four meal types down to one.
Okay, last one.
Okay, could I quick defer to Darcy
Stever, please.
Because I saw her nodding her head, or I saw somebody nodding their head. So maybe you can enlighten us a little bit on this. I know I've worked in schools where we do have the free breakfast and kids are still using their pins when they do the grab and go, so maybe you can enlighten us further. Could you state your name for the record again and proceed?
Yes, Darcy Stieber, Director of Nutrition, Mankato Area Public Schools. Madam Chair, so in my district, I'll use that as an example, what we did during the free meals that were offered over the last 2.5 years is that students would come through the line, and at an elementary level, we were able to click their first meal. So the breakfast, one lunch would be free. But then if they wanted additional items, they still have lunch accounts. And they did, in my district, the policy is that they have to have money in their lunch account to receive extra. So if they wanted a second entree or something like that, they would have to have money in their account. That way we were not incurring any additional debt on seconds.
Thank you, Darcy Stieber. Representative Kreisha, did you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, thank you for that. And so so what I'm just trying to do is clear the air, because let's talk about what this is and what it isn't. So what you're telling me is, and that's great, and I think that's a great policy, if you don't have money in the account, you can't get that next meal. The transparency of this, and I'm just calling this out so we get it, so schools are in a position where a student or a person working the lunch line, a student comes up to get a meal and they would be turned away for that additional meals. You don't have to answer that. I'm just pointing it out. So the reason I bring this is because let's talk about the fact that we're putting a state program in. We're not actually solving the lunch shaming, because the lunch shaming goes back to some students may not have money in their account. Just however that gets to that point, they may have a zero balance. And schools, and I applaud schools because they have to do that. You can't run negative balances. You can't do collections. That's not a great way to run that. So what I would offer on this is just my final comments, and thank you for all this. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Thank you to all the testifiers. I heard someone say, you know, this isn't coming out of our pockets. It is coming out of our pockets. What we are doing in this committee is we take the state dollars that are collected through the different tax mechanisms and we redistribute that out. And the challenges that I have with this is we're making it actually more complicated than it needs to be, and I think we're going to end up over allocating. Frankly, if we look at the roughly 945,000 students, or you pair that down to 830,000 or 900,000 adjusted pupil, we could just allocate a dollar for this and put it on the general fund and give local schools and local parents the control to say, you know what, if you have the dollars, take care of your lunch deficit, and whatever's left could go to better teachers, better pay, academic programs and literacy. So that's how I would like to see it, and I think we could accomplish the same goals. I think that what you're trying to do, and I'm watching the CIP or CEP and all the mechanisms, is we're trying to micromanage the schools to get this, and I appreciate why, but I think we could actually back up and just say, here's some dollars in the general fund, let's make sure this is taken care of. So thank you, Representative Jordan, and those are my concerns about the bill.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. There's a document I'm going to try to dig up and find. I know we did pass the lunch shaming bill a few years ago, and there were requirements around that for districts that still gave some flexibility, and legal aid came back and did some research about the policies that were still on districts' books and why we were concerned that actually wasn't being implemented. So sometimes we have to put things in statute to require, because we can say something unless we have requirements, sometimes it doesn't get done. So I'll try to find that document. And with that, I know Representative Kreisha just did this wrap up. I'm gonna go to Representative Clardy, and I have breaking news. We are going to have the fiscal note by the end of the day. So I'm gonna put a 5 p.m. deadline on for amendments today, and you will have the fiscal note before that. So, and with that, I'm going to go to Vice Chair Clardy.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Thank you, Rep. Jordan, for bringing this very important bill to us. Don't want to sound like a broken record, but as you all know, I've been teaching for 27 years. And with that, I've seen an evolution in how they service children with lunches and how they give them lunches. And there was a time where you either didn't get a lunch or you got a brown paper bag with like a cheese sandwich in it, and everyone else had a hot lunch, okay? And like one of the representatives stated earlier, in most schools, that's not the case. I can tell you that probably up until maybe 2 years ago, that was the case. So as a teacher, and not oh me, but as a teacher, many times we deposited money in just a angel account to make sure those kids were accounted for and make sure that lunch was normalized. So when they stood in line, they didn't stick out. I do agree with Rep. Kresha that there needs to be some accountability in there as far as, you know, as far as balancing it. It sounds like that's been baked in. I also know that as a school that we collected data, and it was PBIS, Positive Behavior Intervention Strategies. We collected data around the whole day and when incidents would occur and when they would rise. And a lot of them would happen during the lunch hour. And part of it was the stigma around it. That's kind of my opinion there. But I do know that there was data collected, and in our particular school, there was an increase in activity there. So I think the beauty of this program is that oftentimes we think that it's just the urban districts that are getting this implement, but it is, you know, people in greater Minnesota, in all the little small towns that we don't hear about often, that are also benefiting from it. And then if we, as an education committee, are concerned with achievement gap, that has to be in the back of our mind, because if the research that was presented earlier is a tied or is attached to achievement, it's just another database that we need to consider. So I just want to thank you, Rep. Jordan, again, for bringing this forward, and I will be supporting it.
Thank you, Vice Chair Clardy. With that, members, just the lay of the land, we will be laying this bill over. We'll be getting the fiscal note, and we're going to set a deadline for 5 p.m. for
Madam Chair.
Amendments, and then let me finish my sentence.
I think we're actually laying the bill on the table, so I think you need a motion.
Representative Kresha, no, I'm laying the bill over as the chair. Thank you, though. So we're going to be laying the bill over, bringing it back up tomorrow with the fiscal note at the beginning of our agenda. And are there any questions so far on that? Seeing none, I want to give Representative Jordan some final words on her bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the discussion. And thank you to all the testifiers and everyone who has helped put this bill together so far. I just want to address some of the thoughts that were brought up during member statements. Members, 1 in 4 food insecure kids comes from a family that's not eligible for free and reduced price lunches. 1 in 4. 25% of the kids that we're trying to feed are not eligible for the programs we have in place. We've tried this surgical approach, and we're still experiencing high volumes of kids who are not able to eat. And when kids can't eat, they can't learn. They can't. There have been numerous studies that people have talked about that have shown that serving breakfast after the bell helps with chronic absenteeism, it helps with literacy, it helps with math, it helps with behavior issues. These are all issues that come up over and over again in this committee, in other committees, in the legislature. This is the bill that also is an important part of mental and physical health. Representative Perez Vega brought up diabetes and how important it is, and the American Diabetes Association supports this bill for those very reasons. This is a mental health bill. We all heard from our students, I think just last week, or maybe it was, I think it was last week, maybe it was the week before, you know, time goes around here. But they talked about how every single student that got up there talked about mental health and talked about the real struggles that they're having with mental health. And if suicide ideation is one of the number one reasons why people are seeking care at Children's, we need to do something about that. I think we should end, though, with some of the things that we heard from students just a few weeks ago. One of our students from Hopkins said that school is the only place where many students can get their needs met. And he talked about how meals are an important part of that. Some other quotes that I wrote down from that hearing were, "I go through so much outside of school that it's hard to focus on school. I don't have nobody else. School is all these kids have." And you can say that because Karma from the St. Paul ALC actually said that school is all I have. And if school is all that people have, we should make sure that students can succeed in school, and meals are part of that. It's not the whole thing, but it's a big start. So I'm excited to talk about our fiscal note tomorrow, and I thank members for the discussion and the thought to this area. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. With that, the chair lays over the bill until tomorrow morning. There's a 5 p.m. deadline on amendments. And one other thing I'd like to do is recognize our page, Stephen Walker. We have him for a time, and we hadn't had a chance for introductions. If you want to stand up and wave, so folks can see you. And thank you for being here. This is a great part about being back in person again, is having the pages back in committee rooms. So tomorrow we'll bring back up House File 5 for the fiscal note, amend that on and take a vote. Then we'll bring up back up House File 44, Representative Feist-Fenster Equity Bill. We've already heard testimony on 44, so we will just be discussing the amendments on the fiscal note and voting on that bill as well. And then we will also hear House File 180 from Representative Hansen. On Thursday, we have MDE back to talk about the governor's budget proposal for education. And with that, members, we are adjourned.